Hello, today is Monday, April 1st, April Fool's Day, and welcome to episode 317 of Fault Lines, the National Security Institute's podcast that gets you quickly up to speed three times a week on the national security and foreign policy debate shaking up America. I'm NSI Senior Fellow Lester Munson. I'm joined today by NSI's Founder and Executive Director, Jamil Jaffer, and my fellow Senior Fellows, Bishop Garrison and Martha Miller. And our conversation today is no joke, folks. We are talking about Sudan, a country that since the end of colonialism has been fraught by civil war and internal conflict. Today, another civil war is raging in Sudan. It's been going on for a year. There is a humanitarian crisis in the country. 14,000 Sudanese at least have perished. 5 million are 5 million Sudanese are considered to be at risk by aid experts. There is a crisis of access and funding for programs to provide assistance to those folks. There are public health implications, cholera, and other things afoot in the population. Half of the 50 million people who live in Sudan are in need of some kind of aid. This is the driver of at least some attention from the international community. The civil war is actually between two components of the Sudanese armed forces. The first, the Sudanese, known as the SAF, the Sudanese Armed Forces, and the second is the Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, which are battling each other in Sudan. Each component of the Sudanese military has different international backers. Iran is providing drones to the SAF. The Wagner Group and Russia are working with RSF. Notably, Ukraine has come in on the side of the SAF because the Russians are on the side of the RSF. The Egyptians also on the side of the SAF. It's quite complicated. It's quite bad. It's hard to think of this thing in our normally Manichaean approach to the world of good and evil, of freedom and the axis of evil, which gets very confounded inside Sudan because it appears that various components of both sides are on each side of the civil war in Sudan. So, Bishop, I want to go to you first here and get your thoughts. There's a whole bunch of questions here, so we can go in any direction. What does this mean for U.S. interests and values? How should the U.S. be responding? So far, the U.S. has been providing aid and I think working behind the scenes to mitigate the role of Russia and Iran in Sudan with occasional success. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so the biggest thing here, as you mentioned, good morning, everyone, is that this is an incredibly complex issue. When you have so many of our adversaries on both sides of this fight, whether you're talking about Iran with the SAF, you're talking about Wagner and potentially Russia with the RSF. Now, granted, the question is going to be, and I think we've had this conversation a little bit, that the strategic significance of this Sudan, right now, given all the other complexities that we have in the world, when we have Russia, Ukraine, when we're still dealing with Israel, Gaza, and Israel, Hamas, excuse me. The question is, well, what one more thing? How do we have enough resources? Do we have enough bandwidth already to actually engage in this? And the answer is, at first, I think for many of us, we don't know. I worry, I'm concerned that we have allowed countries like China to have a great deal of influence on the African continent for some time now. They've spent hundreds of millions of dollars in Sudan trying to support efforts and support their own interests there. And is there a strategic gain for us? Not necessarily. We don't want these countries to have access to the ports. But at the same time, I think in the long run, we should really be concerned about, well, what does it mean for Russia or China or Iran to have a foothold in that country and be able to expand their influence further into the African continent and into these other countries that are have a wealth of resources. And all of this is happening during the backdrop of a huge humanitarian crisis. 70 to 80% of hospitals are closed. You have tens of thousands of people with cholera and other diseases. You have great deals of famine and pestilence and other issues just all across the area. I think we have a moral imperative, but I think in the long run, we're going to find ourselves with a strategic one as well.
Jamil, what do you think we should do? Sounds like Bishop wants us to be more active than we have been.
Yeah, look, I mean, this is a great example of a very, very tough situation and a hard one for us to assess what the U.S.'s role ought to be, because on one hand, you've got a situation where two of our adversaries, normally that have been cooperating for quite a while in a variety of regions, including Ukraine, Russia, and Iran, are at each other's throats because they're supporting different sides in this fight. You've got China that's been engaged in Sudan for many, many years under the Belt and Road program and sending tens of millions of dollars to Sudan. We've been engaged at times back and forth because we've had concerns about terrorism and the like. I mean, people forget that Sudan was the home to Osama bin Laden before he went to Afghanistan. So this is a tough one for us because, as Bishop rightly points out, there's no immediate strategic criticality to Sudan. At the same time, that's an important, a critical port on the Red Sea, which we've heard a lot about. We've talked a lot about on this podcast at that choke point in Yemen. If the Russians or the Chinese get a hold of that port, or the Iranians for that matter, that could be hugely problematic. They control that critical flow of trade through the Red Sea. Of course, the port in Yemen and the location in Yemen that the Iranians have now obtained through the Houthis' access is actually much more critical because it's at that choke point, whereas the Red Sea port for the Sudanese is further up the Red Sea, about halfway up to the Suez Canal. So this is a hard one because, and Bishop also points out, there's an important humanitarian challenge here. How can the U.S. engage? We obviously are not going to get engaged militarily. So the question then is, what can we do usefully? Maybe we can provide humanitarian aid, but that doesn't solve the Iran-China-Russia problem in the region. Maybe it addresses some of the China problem. This is a hard one for me. I don't have a great answer today about what role we should play in Sudan, other than to say, I think, Bishop's raised the right points. I just don't know how it resolves itself, given everything else that's going on in the world today.
Martha, what is this crisis and this kind of crazy quilt of allies and interested parties in Sudan tell us about China, Russia, and Iran, our adversaries in so many other parts of the globe?
Well, two things. One is they're not 100% in alignment. If Iran is supporting the SAF and the Wagner Group in Russia are supporting the RSF, either they are hedging their bets or they are not on the same page as much as people would like to think. And it could be a little bit of both. I do personally think that one solution to ameliorate the situation in Sudan would be to divert resources the Wagner resources elsewhere. They're already posing a threat to the United States and NATO countries in Ukraine. We do have very clear national security interests there. And if we can get on the ball and move ourselves forward to support Ukraine in a meaningful way, which we have not thus far, I believe that would alleviate some of the humanitarian crisis in Sudan and also support our friends and allies in Europe.
But let's again, can I jump in here? Because, I mean, are we sure we want to help? If the point is, okay, well, we get involved in Ukraine, that'll undermine Russia's support for the RSF. That only empowers Iran and Sudan. So are we sure we want to – is that part of the deal we want to cut?
I think it's a little bit unclear right now. We're already fighting Iran essentially in the Red Sea. The Houthis are – Iran's proxy. And we already do have national security interests in Ukraine and NATO allies there. You know, if Ukraine becomes a buffer zone, then what happens if Ukraine is overcome by Russia? Then the buffer zone becomes Poland and the Baltic states. And then we have an even bigger problem than Sudan. But diverting our resources would protect us and our NATO allies. It would reestablish global norms and also Wagner Group would probably surely be called back up to or resources would be devoted to the European front. I think it's fair to say that we are unfortunately already in some form of global. I think it's premature to say that we've reached World War II, but we are certainly already in a pretty severe global conflict right now. And Sudan, I think, is a very sad example of the ramifications it has for civilian populations.
So I'm going to agree with at least parts of what everyone has said. I think Sudan is not quite a strategic imperative for the United States yet, but boy, it's on the precipice of being one. And the chaos we're seeing in Sudan is a direct result, as Martha points out, of our failure to address our interests around the globe, whether it's in Ukraine or with the fight against the Houthis that is taking, that is quite frankly not going well for our side at all. And so this chaos around the globe is contributing directly to what's happening in Sudan. What we ought to be doing is doubling down on our efforts against the Houthis and in Ukraine as a way to stabilize the situation in so many other places. Okay, that's a wrap. Thanks so much to Devlin Burney, Claude Jennings, and the NSI staff for help in producing today's episode. Join us again on Wednesday, April 3rd, for another episode of Fault Lines, the National Security Institute's podcast that gets you smart fast on the national security and foreign policy debates shaking up America. Fault Lines is now on YouTube. So check out our channel for a video of today's episode. If you like what you heard or saw, please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe, and have a wonderful April Fool's Day.